If you live outside a box, everyone gets all freaked out and tries to put you in one. No offense, I said, looking at Mrs. Goldberg. She shook her head. None taken. You're teaching me something. Rafe said, I kind of remember us talking last semester, and you saying something about how you'd thought a little bit about guys before. Have you had fleeting thoughts about girls? Rafe crooked his neck. Sure. That, I said, pointing. That's me and other boys. I'm a human being. I'm curious about lots of things. But no, before you, Rafe, never before had that really occurred to me in a real way. Never, ever. And God forbid you dump my crazy ass, my next person. I think it would be a girl. I thought about Hannah, and I felt a pang of something in my chest. Rafe's parents shared a look. It's going to take us a while to sort this out and understand it, Mr. G said. Just know we love you precisely as you are, okay? And in that moment, I realized I knew exactly what it felt like to come out. Chapter 48. Dad. I'm writing this because I'm still new at this whole expressing myself foolishness, as you would say. I'd like to get to the point that I could trust myself to say it all in person, but I'm afraid the words would leave me and I'd be standing there needing to tell you something but not knowing how. You are a good provider, Dad. I know you pride yourself on that, and you have provided for me and Mom and Luke. I appreciate that more than you know. Unlike some of the other kids at Natick, I appreciate every single thing I have. I do. You're also a really difficult father to have. I've never said that to you before. I've never said most of the things I think to you before. But now I will say them. Or write them. And you can read this or not read it, but at least I will have said/written it all. You always say, don't get a big head about it any time I succeed in anything. Dad, I think I can safely say I have a teeny tiny head by now. You taught me it wasn't okay to have pride in myself or belief in my ability, and I am angry that you did that. That was bad for me. You also taught me that my voice wasn't important or necessary. The fewer words, the better is how you are. And I don't know if that's really who you are or not, but I know it's not actually who I am. I like to talk and be talked to. I like to express ideas and talk about them. I'm not afraid to disagree. And another crazy thing that's happening now is that I'm becoming not afraid to get angry. That was always so hard. I don't know why. I do know why, actually. I lied there to spare your feelings, but I need to be honest here. It's hard for me to get angry because you taught me to walk away from conflict. You taught me to stay on the outside of any situation and look in. And the biggest problem with that is that your life becomes devoid of situations. I think the thing I've learned this year is that life is basically all about the situations, and I want to have a life. I don't want to avoid everything just because it's uncomfortable or hard. I want to live. I don't know exactly what happened with you and Uncle Max, but one thing I do know is I'm not him. I know you worry that I am. I can feel it all the time. What Max and I had in common is that we're sensitive. I know, to you, that's bad. To me, that's good. I like people who are sensitive. I don't think I'm gay, by the way. I think I'm in love with my best friend, and he happens to be a guy. It's confusing for me, too. I wish we could be confused together. But you don't like to be anything with anyone, and I can't fix that. The Goldbergs have offered to let me stay in Boulder and attend school here. But I have parents, and I have a brother, and I go to a good school. I am grateful to have each one of those things. I'm grateful for you, Dad. I love you, even if sometimes I don't like you. So I'm not staying here, as wonderful as Colorado is. I'm coming home to you and Mom and Luke after spring break, and boy, do I hope things will get better between us. And then I'm going back to Natick, because you and I both know that I deserve a good education, and you're not going to take that away from me because I'm not who you want me to be. That doesn't make sense. You're gonna have to get over that. I cheated. I was as surprised as you were when it happened. I didn't think I had that in me. I don't like that it happened, and I will work my very hardest to make sure it never happens again. If the Natick school will give me a second chance, I sure hope you will, too. As I said, I hope things improve between us, but even if they don't, I can promise that I will speak my mind and be who I am, even if you don't want me to be. Because, Dad, I have the right to exist. Love, Benny. Hey, I said when Hannah picked up.
Hey.
I just have three things to say to you. Can you just listen, please? She sighed.
Go.
Okay, first, I'm sorry. I didn't think I was leading you on, but looking back, I should have been more aware. I think whatever I was feeling for Rafe was so tied up in denial that I didn't know how strong it was. Not an excuse, just saying I'm sorry. Two, for what it's worth, not only was I attracted to you, Hannah, but I actually like you. Like, I value your opinion, and I valued your friendship. So you're basically a hot girl who's also extremely interesting, and you deserved better treatment. Third, if you ever, ever decide that you're interested in a friend who values who you are on the inside, I'm here. I mean, not right now because I'm suspended and in Colorado because my dad apparently no longer has a son, but I will be here. For you. She laughed a little.
Well, I'm guessing there's a story there.
Suffice it to say that when you try to be everything to everyone, sooner or later you cheat on a math test and then admit to it in a speech in front of the whole school. She laughed a little more.
Yep, that's what tends to happen.
I'm not hugely antagonistically angry with you anymore. I'm not sure I'm up for seeing you, but maybe someday? We'll see. You're with the Rafe guy?
Yep.
Okay, then, she said. Yep, not ready to talk about that. You actually changed me, I said. She paused.
Do I want to hear this? About how I changed you? Is this going to hurt my feelings?
No, not at all. It was that stuff about vulnerability. I think I'm definitely one of those people whose dad taught him never to be vulnerable, and that totally screwed me up. I'm trying to learn how to do it now. So thanks for that.
Huh, she said. I can live with that.
I'm glad.
Take care of yourself, Ben Carver, okay?
You too, Hannah Stroud. Chapter 49. Rafe claimed he could teach me to swim.
I don't know, Rafe. I was told once that I have the buoyancy of a, I don't know, a really unbuoyant thing, I said.
He responded, nice metaphor. We went to the Colorado Athletic Club in Boulder, which was basically the nicest place I'd ever been, yet Rafe acted like it was a nuisance to walk through. I would never get used to that sort of callousness, but that was a whole different plate of Czech dumplings. As we got changed in the locker room, I looked over at Rafe and saw him. Not like his body, just who he was, and that made me smile. He was a good person, and I knew now I could trust him, with my life if I had to.
Thank you, I said.
You're extremely welcome, he said, slamming the locker shut. We walked toward the pool.
What for?
I threw my towel over my naked shoulder.
I'm grateful for you.
Aw.
No, really.
Maybe all this stuff wouldn't have happened had I never met you, but on the other hand, none of this stuff would have happened. He laughed.
You speak in riddles now.
I just mean I'm glad is all. You helped me be me,
Wow. Thanks, he said. That means a lot. I'm grateful for you, too. Before you, I had nobody beyond my parents who knew how awesome I was.
Such a narcissist, I said, and he stuck out his tongue. Rafe dove in, and I got splashed a bit. Then I gingerly took the steps into the shallow end. The water was lukewarm, which surprised me. I sat on the top step and adjusted to the wetness on my lower body.
Come on! I'm going to teach you to swim, he said.
I shook my head. Nope, no thanks. I'm fine going through the rest of my life without swimming. There are some things I'm good at, and this is not one of them.
Come on, he said, coaxing me off the steps. I'm here, and I'm going to teach you to float. I won't let you sink.
I tentatively walked toward him as if the water were my enemy. Rafe just looked at me bemused. He crossed his arms and picked his feet off the floor and treaded water, making it look easy. When I got to him, I was up to my chest. He turned me around, goosed my butt, and put his hands on my back. Slowly, I allowed myself to lean back onto his hands. I picked my feet up off the floor and held my breath, sure I'd go under, that I'd be too heavy for Rafe to carry. I wasn't. He was holding me up. Then he took me out a little deeper, and soon he was treading water while holding me. I saw the 8-foot sign, and I thought, wow. All that had happened in the last few months had changed me, changed my body, taken weight off my shoulders, that sort of thing.
Take a deep breath. You'll see. It'll keep you afloat.
I took a deep breath. I held it. My face sunk under the water. My body began to as well.
Holy hell! What the heck is wrong with your body? He said as he struggled to keep me up.
I started to thrash my arms. I could hear him repeatedly saying, relax, relax, even though my ears were submerged in the water. Rafe was keeping me afloat by treading as fast as he could, kicking underwater and waving one arm like an angry ferret. Still, we slowly began to sink.
Well, this is unpleasantly ironic, I said, water seeping into my nostrils as my nose and eyes submerged. You mean coincidence, Rafe said as he attempted to pull me toward the shallow end.
I heard every other word as my ears were now underwater. I didn't mean coincidence, actually, but there was no time to explain the irony. That I'd just learned to tread water in the world, and now I was drowning. A funny thing happens when you're drowning and a person attempts to drag you to safety. You fight. Instinct. I thrashed and kicked, and I saw his face go under, and he raised himself up momentarily, and then went under again. And I thought of that scene at the end of Titanic, and wondered which of us would be barely alive on the piece of wood from the ship, and which of us would be dead. I had a guess. And truly, I'd rather it went that way. If one of us was going to die, let it be me, not Rafe. Though best would be if we both lived.
You're gonna have to save yourself, or tread till I can get some help, or a kickboard, Rafe said, his breathing labored. In a second, I'm gonna let you go, okay?
I didn't have time to say okay, though I meant it.
Okay. We shared a final eye contact, and I thought, not now. Please not now, when things are finally happening in my life.
He let me go, and just like in New Hampshire, I dropped like a stone. I hit the bottom. But this time, I bounced up. Maybe I had a little extra spring in my step, I don't know. I bounced up once, almost to the surface, and the second time I hit bottom, I bounced up high. And then I just moved my arms and got myself to the side. I grasped the side and clung to it, never so thankful to be holding on to something. And as I held on with all my might, and Rafe instructed me to pull myself along the ledge to the shallow end, I realized I saved myself.
Rafe didn't. He helped. But I was the one who figured out how to swim my heavy body to safety.
This is Dan Bittner. We hope that you have enjoyed this production of Honestly Ben by Bill Konigsberg. This audiobook was produced and directed by Robert Kessler, executive producer Paul R. Gagne. Music by Ethan Newberg. Print edition published by Arthur A. Levine Books, an imprint of Scholastic Inc. Text copyright 2017 by Bill Konigsberg. Production copyright 2017 by Scholastic Inc. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.